This is a regular business meeting, so we normally accept requests from visitors and speakers from the floor first. This is a time to address the board if you want to bring up a matter that's not already on our agenda for tonight. Is there anybody here who's here to speak on a matter that's not already on our agenda? Okay. Seeing none. What's that? Okay, seeing none. Is there somebody here from Curves? There are two somebodies here from Curves. Come on up at the podium up here with me real quick. All right.
Well,
so I'm just gonna read this proclamation real quick. Whereas National Curves Day on May 17th was initiated as a partnership with the United States Office of Women's Health and Curves International, Inc. in a celebration of National Women's Health Week, May 13 through 19, to increase awareness of women's health issues nationwide. And whereas from that day forward, National Curves Day will occur in the spring on the first Thursday following Mother's Day during National Women's Health Week. You got that? Everybody got that? We'll post it on the town website. All right, and whereas National Curves Day celebrates the efforts of national and community organizations working with partners and volunteers through fundraising efforts to improve awareness of key women's health issues, and whereas Amanda Ogletree, partner manager of Curves Carborough, will be giving away free 30-day memberships to Curves Carborough during the week of May 13 through 19 to promote women's health. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I proclaim May 17th, 2012, as a National Curves Day in the town of Carborough.
Present this
to you,
ladies.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Either of you like to say something real brief?
Well, we would just like to say Curves has been a presence in Carborough for over 12 years. Any of you that don't know, we're over in Carborough Plaza, and it is an organization that serves women, and our attempt is to improve the health of women through a fitness program that's designed to give you strength training and a cardiovascular workout. We invite anyone to come. Our youngest member is 14, and believe it or not, our oldest member is 91. Oh, wow. We meet women's needs from all ages, types, all women. But it's an organization that's friendly and welcoming. We do have a great special going on. We're trying to meet 1 million members achieved in this month across the country. So if anyone's interested, we have free 30-day coupons for anyone here. We're going to pass them out to the board women, and we invite you to come, and we thank you for this proclamation.
All right, thank you.
All right. We'll give it to you.
Can I have one?
Okay. And now.
And we'll be out of your way.
George, are you ready?
I think we have a consent agenda.
We're on the consent agenda. Oh, right, we're on the consent agenda. Okay. All right, so let's move on to the consent agenda. Mr. Manager.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, members of the board, there are seven items on your consent agenda. The first item is for approval of the minutes from May 1 and May 7. The second item is a request to set a public hearing on the land use ordinance text amendment related to the local stormwater program. Item number 3 is for consideration of appointments to advisory boards. Item number 4 is a request to set a public hearing for the land use ordinance related to text amendments for payment in lieu for affordable housing units. Item number 5 is a request to set a public hearing on a land use ordinance text amendment, adding a stormwater volume control requirement. And I'd like to point out to the board that you have a modified resolution before you for that item, and that revised resolution adds engineers, Friends of Bowling Creek, as well as Morgan Creek Valley Alliance to the list of groups that will be asked to comment on the draft ordinance. Item number 6 was a monument application from an individual. The applicant has requested to make some changes, and so we're asking for continuance of that item. And finally, last but not least, the last item is for consideration for approval of the use of town commons for a free concert.
Go ahead.
I just had a question about the
final item about the concert for Town Commons. I think it said somewhere it was going to cost the town $11,000, and I was wondering how that compares to other events like Carver Day or July 4th celebration.
The $10,000 or $11,000 estimate is a not to exceed. We think that would be the town's, the highest amount of cost, potential cost of the town. We would look to enter into a service agreement with the Cat's Cradle folks, and we could get that number a lot lower. How that compares to other activities, maybe I could ask Anita to comment on that one.
Good evening. Our lowest event is probably $5,700. That's Carver Day. And the music festival is about $25,000. So, and everything in between.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. While we're talking about this, David, it occurred to me that there's just an opportunity to bring up the fact that the Town Commons, you know, other than the farmers market, is an underutilized resource of the town, and maybe in working on this event, Anita and Annette can put their heads together to think about how to do more, whether from an economic development or community building perspective of the Town Commons.
Mark, yes. I just wanted to point out on agenda item C3, consideration of appointments to advisory boards. On the first page, it looks like there's just a small typo about the Greenways Commission liaison appointment. Above, it says it expires 1/1/13, but down below it says 7/1/13, so it should just say 1/1/13.
I think the ordinance might have the correct date. And
Pardon me?
I think the ordinance has the correct date,
yeah,
in it, but
so.
You're right.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Abstract does not.
Okay. Yeah, you're right, it does. Yeah.
Okay, very good.
I will move item 1 through 4, item 5 as amended, and item 7.
Second.
All right. All those in favor of 1 through 4, 5 amended, and 7, signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. C6, anybody?
That's, they're going to come back to us.
Oh, we're going to, they withdrew, he said, that's right, I'm sorry. So item D1, Tree City USA Awards. Mr.
George.
Good evening, everybody. It's always fun time of year to do this when we talk about our Tree City USA Award, which we received for the 27th year. And I'll give a brief presentation of the Arbor Day celebration we had this year at McDougal School. And then we have three poster contest honorees here tonight to recognize. In order to receive this designation, the town has to meet four standards. Anybody know what they are? Okay. A tree board or department, a tree ordinance, a community forestry program, and an Arbor Day observance. And of course, this year, the Arbor Day observance was held at McDougal School on March 22nd. Events included the... Excuse me, thank you. So the events included the flag, Tree City USA flag, being presented by the state forester to Mayor Chilton, poster contest, as I noted, and the planting of a Okami cherry tree, which gets to be about 15 to 30 feet tall, has pink rosy blossoms, and a mild fragrance, is what I read.
Where was that planted?
At McDougal School.
Okay.
George, can you eat those? Does it have cherries you can eat?
You can try them out and let me know.
And another question. I noticed in the abstract it says crab apple tree.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, the abstract is incorrect. Okay. Yes, it was a Okami cherry tree. So originally it was a crab apple tree, and the editor didn't get to it in time. Here's some photos of the day. Here's Mayor Chilton receiving the flag, and this flag is always proudly displayed here in Town Hall and also down at Public Works. This is Kelly Blair, our groundskeeper, too, pointing out about pests in trees, engaging the students in good conversation. And as always, Smokey shows up with, I think those are his thumbs or his paws. And here's the tree, and everybody stood in line patiently and helped backfill the tree. There's some encouragement going on. The clay was really wet that day. It was tougher than it looked. Here's Smokey being escorted to the principal's office, I believe.
What'd she have in her bag?
There was a all the students received a white oak seedling as a gift. And there's the final tree in its form. Before we bring the honorees up, I'd like to thank several people from McDougall Elementary, Principal Amanda Hartness, Intern Principal Arpita Burns, who I believe was in that last slide with Smokey, Teachers Laura Bird and Cynthia Hammond, and I believe Ms. Hammond is here tonight. Thank you for coming. From Public Works, Lakeisha White Kelly, Chris Clark, our Interim Landscape and Ground Supervisor, Bobby Horton, Kelly Blair, who you saw in the photos, and Paul Hepp, a.k.a. Smokey, and also Jacob Presley, one of our state foresters. And, Your Honor, if you would come up, and I'll call up the honorees in alphabetical order here, and have a gift. And if you bring your poster with us so we can share it with everybody, that would be great. So I'll call you up one at a time, then you can wait up here. Jonas Akers.
Smiling bananas.
If he would have drawn me, I would have looked like a monkey.
Well, actually, I think you are in there.
Fatima Hall. Fatima, could you come up, please?
Slide.
Just
a regular
park.
Kind of like a Carver
schoolhouse
slide.
Today. And Nari Ma.
There you go. Congratulations. Extended weekend for us. But anyway, all right, great.
Oh, have his sunglasses on the sun.
All right. Oh, great.
We got everybody. That's it. Congratulations again to all our
All right.
somebody leave their picture up there?
I've got them, and I'll hand them out here in just a second.
We have it. Fatima, they have your picture. It's okay.
All right.
She wants her picture
back. I hear you.
Better hand it over.
All right. Congratulations again to the poster contest winners. It was a fun event all the way around. Great job by the Public Works Department. All right. That brings us to item D2, Partnership to End Homelessness, 2011 Annual Report. Mr. Manager.
Okay, Ms. Jamie Roy from Orange County would like to present this report.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for this opportunity. Is this working? To speak to everyone. My name is Jamie Rowey. I'm the Homeless Program Coordinator for Orange County, and I work for the Orange County Partnership to End Homelessness. And so tonight I'm presenting our annual report from 2011, and I believe everybody has a copy of that. So the Partnership to End Homelessness was formed about 7 years ago. And the reason it was formed was because, as you know, the causes of homelessness are very complex and they're varied. And then finding solutions to helping to end and prevent homelessness is as complicated as each individual person is. And it takes a collaboration among service providers and governments and the university and volunteers and everyone in the community working together to help end and prevent homelessness. So the partnership was formed about 7 years ago, and then we developed a plan to end homelessness, which we began implementing about 5 years ago. And for the first several years, we worked primarily on forming our committees, our work groups, doing a lot of outreach to get the right people on all those committees, and then developing our goals and developing our strategies for those committees. And then in the last couple of years, we've really started implementing those initiatives and those strategies. So the way the report is laid out is highlights the main areas that we work in the partnership. So the main sections are, there's one on housing, there's one on employment, then on the flip side, there's one on services, and lastly, community participation. So I wanted to go through this briefly and point out some of the highlights from last year. So, and it really takes all of these areas, the housing, the employment, and other income, and the services, and the help from the community to be able to, have sustainable solutions to homelessness. So, under housing, something I wanted to highlight was the 100,000 Homes campaign. And what that is, it's a national initiative that's been going on for a couple of years. And the goal of the initiative is by 2014 to house 100,000 people who are the people who are most difficult to serve, people who are chronically homeless and have disabilities. So this national campaign has been going on for several years, and Orange County partnered with Wake County and with the United Way to join the initiative and to, what we did last year, we spent about 6 months mapping out locations where we were likely to find homeless people, both in unsheltered locations and then also in shelters and other service providers. And then we began lining up a supply of housing and services, of which there are not nearly enough, and they're really actually very hard to line up and target for this population. And then we also planned something that's called Registry Week, which we held the first week of January in this year, or the last week of January. And so what we did in Registry Week is that's actually where you get teams of folks to go out into the community on two consecutive mornings. Mayor Chilton was involved with this and several others. Where you go out from 4 to 7 in the morning to unsheltered locations, you try to find people, you do an in-depth survey with them to find out all about their housing and their health, and then you put them, basically it's like an inventory. We have a list of all these people now, we really know what their needs are, and we're working with a task force to one by one find housing and services for these folks. Then under employment, I wanted to highlight something that we're calling our Jobs Partners Program. And the purpose of that program is, well, we're working with a wide variety of service providers in the community that provide job readiness, job training, employment information, and education resources, all working together to put together a program called Job Partners, which basically documents a homeless person's job readiness. And then we're recruiting employers. And so we're basically saying, this is our stamp of approval. We feel like these folks are a really good risk to hire. And so it can't help everyone, but for people that have got a lot of barriers to employment, they really need, you know, someone to vouch for them. They need someone's backing because they often have bad employment histories. They might have criminal backgrounds and lots of other barriers that employers might see and say, I don't want to take a risk. So, and then we've lined up a bunch of employers who are willing to hire these folks, about a dozen so far, and we're reaching out to the community and trying to find more employers. And that's really what we're going to be focusing on this year. Then, under services, I wanted to quickly focus on the transition court, which is, it's kind of a pilot, kind of in an experimental stage, but we're working with, we've got now three lawyers who are on the executive team of the Partnership to End Homelessness, and one of them from the DA's office, Jeff Neiman, he started cooking this up saying, you know, it'd be great, we've got these homeless folks who are, you know, on the streets, a lot of, like, unsheltered, chronically homeless folks who've got a lot of different encounters with police officers and with businesses downtown and pedestrians downtown. How do we stop the revolving door of these folks just going through all the institutions, through the jails, through the prisons, through a lot of encounters with police officers, through the hospitals, and try to get them the treatment they need so that they can, you know, stop the revolving door and stop the sort of endless cycle that people get so tired of. So that's underway, and what we're doing is trying to get folks, as an alternative to jail, try to get them into treatment programs. Lastly, I wanted to focus on, under community participation, a program called our Support Circle Initiative. And what support circles are teams of 8 to 10 people, often from faith-based communities, who work as a support network for a person who's transitioning from homelessness to permanent housing. And often that's a really hard period. It's really hard for folks to stabilize in housing after they've been homeless and gone through kind of all the difficulties and crises of that. So often it takes, a support circle, can help them with a little bit of emergency financial assistance, but really just the sort of support they need to help them, you know, stabilize in housing. And I wanted to point out that we've got several folks in the room who've been involved in our partnership. We've got Mayor Chilton, we've got Jackie Gist, we've got Tish Galou, and then Allison and Molly DeMarco. And so I was just wondering if anybody wanted to say anything about their involvement with the partnership.
Sure, Tish.
I'm Tish Galou, and I was on the partnership for 2 years and part of the community participation group. We started with Jackie, who was on the group, and the support circles was an outcome of community participation. And it is just so exciting to be able to put a network around an individual and a family to have a year of support to actually make it and not go back into homelessness, which is the goal, obviously, of the Partnership to End Homelessness. And the other groups that Jamie mentioned, the Access to Services and the Job Readiness Program, they are also helping the individuals that are part of the Support Circle Network. So it's really been a really solid effort of everybody involved in the partnership to actually make a difference in people's lives. So it's just a wonderful program.
Thanks, Tish. Thank you.
And we can add that our first circle has just formed.
Yes.
And so they're just, you know, they've just formed, and we've gotten applications from people from different provider agencies, and so we're
they get their partners this week.
Are these circles institution-based or?
They're faith-based. We have one from St. Thomas More Catholic Church. We have one from University United Methodist that has done it in conjunction with individuals from Church of the Advocate and also Chapel of the Cross. So that those are the first circles that are forming. We also have been working in partnership with some individuals from Binkley Baptist who have surrounded an individual who has recently come out of prison. So they're not totally part of the partnership, but we've given them guidance in order to help them along. So there's like two, three circles going.
Great. Thanks, Tish.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
All right. I just had one referral. I know that the station, he has a business up in Washington, D.C., and is very inspired by a program they have there for training chefs homelessness. And so I would encourage you to get in contact with him and for the employment program.
Okay. This is the owner of the station?
Yes.
Okay.
Mike Benson. Mm-hmm.
Mike Benson, okay. Is it called Catalyst Kitchen by chance? Do you know?
The program?
Yeah.
I don't recall what it's called, but apparently it's well known. So okay.
That's kind of like a chain, like a franchise.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And then that actually reminds me, we've got one other initiative through the Employment Work Group, which is to develop a social enterprise, which is like a business that will employ homeless people and provide job training and work experience. So we had a UNC planning student do a bunch of research for us and come up with a couple of proposals. And now we're trying to, take it to the next phase of figuring out what enterprise we want. And we're thinking about possibly food production and preparation and then getting enough people involved to help it happen.
And just another idea, the homeless prevention aspect of it, right? And read how so much, a lot of the money is spent towards utility costs. Mm-hmm. So perhaps I know that locally in Carver we don't have a weatherization business, and they may have guaranteed steady stream of work given that we have a program, the WISE program. So it would be there's some technical requirements for being qualified to be able to provide the weatherization, but something to think about as an opportunity.
Yeah, great.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
With regard to the ban the box proposal for local governments,
yes.
What's the status of that right now? Has it just been received, or have you gotten feedback yet?
Thank you for asking about that.
We saw a presentation about it, and I think the advocates for it were planning on coming this spring to talk, or sometime later this year, to talk to various local governing boards.
Yeah,
in fact,
Hank Elkins, who's on the executive team of the partnership, is kind of leading that ban the box proposal, and tonight he's presenting to the Orange County Commissioners that proposal, and the partnership is going to probably formally endorse it, and they're looking for other endorsements, and then and I think we're trying to figure out with each different local government what's the best way to approach it. Do you work through the town manager? Do you work through the HR department? So we need to do a little bit of background work, and then before possibly we present to the elected officials.
Okay.
Right. Just one last comment. I'm sorry, Dan.
Hey, Jamie.
Hey,
Dan. Thanks for this. This report is great. It's really so readable, and the sense it gives of how much is being done in Orange County is really very inspiring. So my first question is there a place on the web where citizens can find this document that we're looking at?
Yes, at our website, so for the Orange County Partnership to End Homelessness, and sometimes you want to put in North Carolina so you don't go to California, and then right on the first page you come to,
okay,
there's a
so
link
someone
to the
searches
report.
For Orange County Partnership to End Homelessness, NC. They'll get
right.
to it. Great. The other thing I want to ask is people who might want to plug into some of these efforts, what's the best way for them to go about that?
On our website, there's a button that you can push that will add you to our listserv, and then I send out periodic emails that have got volunteer opportunities. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm just about to send out another one. Also, if at the end of the report, it's got my contact information, and so under Join Our Efforts, and it's got a few ideas for how you can get involved, like forming a support circle, helping plan Project Connect, and then it's got my contact information, my email, and my phone number, mm-hmm. and so people can also call me directly.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. And I've got extra copies of it, which I'll leave on a chair in case anybody wants them.
I just wanted to make a last comment. Hopefully, once we have established our local living economy network of businesses, that this would be a very natural opportunity for the businesses to connect and have this
That'd be great. I feel like the business community is our big next nut to crack because, and so I want to start, presenting this to the different economic development groups and Chapel Hill Downtown Partnership and try to sort of, because I think a lot of businesses are motivated for two reasons. One, charitable, but also because, like in downtown Chapel Hill in particular, with problems with, homeless people and how, they would like to help them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. All right.
Thank
great.
Thank you.
All right. I believe that brings us, Mr. Manager, to item D3, excuse me. Public hearing on your budget.
Yes, sir. Mayor Chilton, members of the board, the recommended budget was delivered to you on May 1. Tonight is for the public hearing, the required public hearing on the budget. The budget adoption is scheduled for June 19th. And on June 19th, I just wanted to make you aware, as I'm sure you already know, that there are several items that would be part of the that agenda item. One would be for the budget ordinance, for adoption of the ordinance, a resolution to adopt the pay plan for 12-13, a resolution to approve a 3% cost of living adjustment, a resolution to adopt miscellaneous fees and charges, as well as a reimbursement resolution for your 12-13 capital purchases, a resolution for the town attorney contract, and a resolution to designate fund balance. So I've got I think you already know what's in the budget. I have six slides if you want to hear them, but we can skip over that if you would like.
I have three people signed up to speak, so why don't we hear from the three people and then see what there are any questions we have for the staff to follow up on that. The first person signed up to speak is Molly DeMarco. Molly?
Good evening, everybody. Mayor Chilton and Alder folks. As Mayor Chilton already said, my name is Molly DeMarco. I'm here with the Fair Jobs and Wages team from Orange County Justice United. I'm here to speak tonight in favor of your funding of a position to work with day laborers, the town, including the police department, employers, and neighbors, on more dignified conditions for our neighbors as they work. I'd just like to have folks who are here from HRC and from Justice United and El Centro to raise your hand because you're here in support of this. Thank you. So we'd like to thank you all for rescinding the anti-lingering ordinance to improve conditions for our day laborer neighbors. We'd also like to thank you for requesting that funds be put in your budget for a day laborer position to work with the county, with the town. Members of Justice United, the Human Rights Center, and El Centro Latino, Hispano, all work together on drafting a position description, and we're currently working together on guidelines for supervision of that position. We feel that the funding for this position is a key step in improving conditions for those seeking day labor. It's also important to establish this position as a transition to starting a worker center in our community. Our three organizations are dedicated to working for the success of this position, and we urge you to continue your support for that funding. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Molly.
Molly, while you're there, I want to let you and others from Justice United know you were all here a couple of years ago talking about the housing wage question, and when we had the budget presentation a couple of weeks ago from the town manager, the board asked him to come up with a plan that would accomplish two things. One is removing what's now in the personnel policy a reference to a living wage that's pegged to the poverty level, and instead replace that with reference to the housing wage that you all suggested, and then part of also a plan to move. There's basically a handful of positions in Carborough that are below the housing wage. and we direct him to also have a plan to bring those positions up to the housing wage. And so that's part of his work plan now in his first couple months on the job. So hopefully we'll have good news on those fronts before too long.
Well,
so,
wonderful, Dan.
Thanks
I
for coming
that.
In.
Right. The next person I have signed up is Chris Brook and then Robert Dow.
Good evening. I don't want to spend too much time reiterating what Molly's just said, but my name is Chris Brook. I'm a member of the board of the HRC, here to speak in favor of your funding for a position to help day laborers in our community, and also thank you for proactive positive steps that you've taken in the past year. We really do think that getting rid of the anti-lingering ordinance was a real step in the right direction and has helped the day laborer community feel more a part of our community. There are still challenges that day laborers face. One of the challenges that I'm sure that you're aware of is wage theft, which is a huge problem and has been, is consistently a problem with day laborers, but has been even more of a problem since the economic recession, and we hear about it a great deal on the corner, hear about it a great deal at Abbey Court. We also hear about workers who want to get additional training so that they can more easily find work on a daily basis and be more marketable, have further skills. And workers also, you know, want to work together so that they can, when they see a problematic employer, come up with some sort of collaborative way of dealing with that so that they can, you know, put together the skills that they have as a group to bring everybody up. And we really see the funding for this position to work with day laborers as a way to assist workers in these challenges and in building up these skills that they need to be more marketable and to avoid sort of unsavory employers. So we've been working, HRC has been working collaboratively, as Molly said, with Justice United, with members of El Centro, with a lot of y'all who've been at a lot of those meetings as well, and want this to be a joint effort with the workers as well, to ensure everybody's on the same page and that we're, you know, not only putting money someplace, but making sure that it's being spent in a fashion that's going to give a lot of bang for the buck. So I know everybody is committed from those organizations to making that happen. Really appreciate all the positive steps that have been happening in the past year and hope you'll continue what we see sort of proactively working with the community.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Robert Dowling.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the board. My name is Robert Dowling, the Executive Director of Community Home Trust. I'm here to thank you for your support. We asked for $34,000, the same amount we've received the past four fiscal years. I'm hoping the manager has that in his budget. I haven't confirmed that with him.
Yes.
And we appreciate that support you provided to us. I figured out while I was sitting there that this board has been supporting this organization for 21 years now, since Jackie first joined the board back in 1991. There are now 23 homes in the Home Trust in Carborough. There are 9 more under construction right now in Ballantyne and Claremont. And in 2012, 2013, there'll be another 9 built in Ballantyne and Claremont. So our total Carborough inventory will go to 41 homes by the end of the next fiscal year. That's more than twice what it was 2 years ago. And the $34,000 allocation we have received is, this will be our fifth year, 12-13, which is the same for all the local governments. We will have grown our inventory by more than 50% in those 5 years, operating with the same dollar amount, and in fact operating with one half less FTE, full-time equivalent. Our work is more difficult than it's ever been. This is my 15th year, and it is much more difficult now than it's ever been before. It is really difficult to get a loan from a bank, particularly if you're low income, particularly if you don't have many cash reserves, financial assets. Banks just don't seem to want to lend money. And our go-to bank was RBC. PNC is not even in the game. They're on the sidelines. They're not even in the gym. I'm not sure where they are. There are other banks that we've been working with who are very difficult to work with. I won't bore you with the technical details, but it is extraordinarily difficult right now to get people loans. And we've got a lot of inventory. We have a developer who expects us to sell homes. And I think you've heard developers stand here at this microphone and complain that we don't sell their homes very well. Well, it ain't easy. It ain't easy. It's not for lack of trying. On top of that, we're struggling with people who are homeowners who have lost jobs in this recession or who have lost income in this recession. And we bought a home last week from a woman who's a single mom who lost her job, regained another job at a lower wage, and just simply couldn't make it work. She was facing foreclosure. We terminated a ground lease. We worked together, paid off the bank loan, and now we own that property. And now we have to fix it up and sell it again. And we have three other homeowners who are in very similar positions. One we just learned about yesterday. We have 195 homes, and most people just live their lives and we don't talk to them on a regular basis. But when they get in trouble, that's when they call us. And so you never know when the phone's going to ring and someone's going to say, I lost my job. It's a difficult time. And if these three people, we've never had a foreclosure. In every instance, we've stepped in and transitioned the person out of the house by servicing the loans. In one situation, the person was able to stay in the home. But it's very difficult, and I don't anticipate it's going to get easier as our inventory continues to grow. We're trying to change how we do what we do to adjust to these circumstances. My board has been very supportive of that, but there's only so many things we can control. We can't control banks, we can't control economic circumstances. So we're a good organization, we're pretty smart, we work hard, and we don't believe in just doing what we've been doing because that's the way we did it. My staff, I will tell you, I drive them crazy because I'm always saying, what do we need to change? How do we change? How do we accommodate this? What can we do better? I think we do a pretty good job of doing, of changing what we do to maintain what my goal is to have the best inclusionary housing program we can possibly have, if not the best in the country. We will never have the largest, but we manage 195 homes, 41 of them which will be in Carrboro, and the objective is that those homes are successful. They work for the people who live in them, they work for the people who live around them, those surrounding neighborhoods, and they'll work for the people who will need them 10 and 20 years from now. That's success, that's what we're aiming for, and we very much appreciate your support.
Thanks, Robert. Is it the local branch that handled your loan needs, or was that through like the regional bank? Or
the loan originator was in the local branch, yes.
Okay, so you work with the people who are basically still here, but
they're not able to work with us.
Different, and they're just not able to because of the policies of.
Correct.
And do you have any sense that that's something that, that might be amenable to any form of persuasion?
They think that they'll get in the game.
Okay.
But they're not ready. They're still, I guess, trying to assimilate this merger. And there are mortgage loans happening at PNC, but not our type. We're probably the most complicated loans they'll do with the 99-year ground lease. It's just they don't understand it. And the person we work with thinks they'll get there, but it'll probably be end of the summer.
Okay.
We have all this inventory right now.
Correct.
And we just don't have many lenders.
Gotcha. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you all.
All right.
Thanks, Robert. Is there? That's all the people I've signed up to speak on the budget. Is there anybody else who is here to speak on it who did not sign up? All right. Seeing none, are there any questions for the town staff or directions you want to give to the town staff? All right. And we will have, we're currently, this, the, we're scheduled to adopt on, you said it a minute ago.
19th.
June 19th. Okay. Very good. I'll write it right down. All right. Very good. All right. So I guess we'll just move on to item D4. A resolution making an appointment to Orange County Animal Services Board. Jack.
I'd like to move that we appoint Lisa Lackey to the Orange County Animal Services Board.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The matter passes unanimously.
Thanks, Lisa.
All right, and that brings us to item D5, a request to set a public hearing on a land use ordinance amendment changes to signage requirements.
After Tina is going to make the staff report.
So this is just, this resolution is just a request to set a public hearing.
Right. Do we need a report to do that?
Well, I think because
there was some controversy, I guess.
The staff was offering us three different options, two of which they could move ahead and have a public hearing in June. And the other one, which really seemed not only more complicated but more suitable to Carborough's needs, would take them more time to research. And, you know, okay. I personally, this ordinance has far-reaching visibility, and I'm in no hurry to rush it for any, you know, for we do not develop ordinances for one entity. So I would really like us to, I mean, please go ahead and give us your presentation, but I'd like at this point to really encourage the board to look at option one, which is staff is leaning more towards option one and thinks that it would better meet our needs, but they could not have it ready for a public hearing in several weeks. Is that correct?
It's actually option three.
Option three,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Right.
I got everything right but the numbers, right?
I think you've just provided my introduction.
Great report. Thank you very much.
So I guess I'll just move on. In summary, the purpose of having this as a presentation rather than just a consent item is because there are implications to changes in the signage ordinance, and we felt that this was more of a policy issue and therefore wanted to seek your direction before moving forward.
We have...
You're not done.
I'm interested in hearing a brief description of the three options.
Yeah,
it's coming.
Okay.
She was done. She paused in a way that fooled me and Danny. Go ahead.
It's pretty much a quick overview. You have a pretty good report in your packet that I think covers the main details. But in short, our commercial sign ordinance provides allocation based on linear street frontage. And this was a quick cut and paste to give you a visual sense of kind of the apples and oranges that we're talking about. And there's a certain 0.5 square footage of sign allotted based on your first 200 linear feet of street frontage, and then you get an even higher percentage based on your street frontage exceeding that 200 linear feet. So in essence, the wider your property, the more signage you get. And traditionally, as you can tell from most of our existing downtown, this system's worked pretty well. You know, we have mainly one and two, maybe in some cases three-story buildings. They often only have one tenant on the first floor, maybe a second on the upper floor, and this approach has worked pretty well. You know, the amendments that came in a response to the Vision 2020 that looked at building up brought this new type of development, kind of the mid-rise, into being. The 300 East Main Street project is really the first, so in a way we're talking about them, but we're also talking more long-term because other projects of this nature are coming. And as you can see, what worked for a relatively low-rise building may in fact not be appropriate for something that may have several tenants, one on top of the other, or in this case may have an interior courtyard or some type of an interior pedestrian road that may not have the direct street frontage that we've considered traditionally for the purposes of your allocation. we've looked, staff has looked at this as really three main categories of signage. There's the signage, and again, we're using the East Main Street project as the example because they're first, but this would affect others coming. There's signage for the ground shops or the tenants, the individual tenants that you see as the pedestrian walking down the street. In this case, I've added a second bullet because there would be a second or maybe third, depending on the building, there'd be additional rows of tenants on the inner section facing that inner courtyard or pedestrian area. There would be wall signs, which are the signs that really identify the building, in this case, mainly the hotel portion of the project. And there'd also be directional signs, and in some cases, directional signs with logos. And that's why I've included this picture to give you a sense of what that means. It could just say parking. It could say parking with the brand name of the hotel. You know, it depends on the situation. Staff has proposed, originally we had three options just this afternoon. A fourth option has emerged, and that's why that's shown in yellow. In short, option one would be to go through the existing sign ordinance and add a little bit here and there, you know, an extra phrase or so forth to speak to some of these topics that we've just spoken to. Probably the big new component for option one would to add something that would speak to a maximum height for signs. Now, it's never really been an issue before because our buildings have been relatively low, but as we look at buildings potentially getting higher, it may be something that we want to think about. Option two would be just to look at this in terms of hotels. You know, perhaps hotels have special needs. Maybe they're the only business that really needs a high wall sign. Maybe they need special consideration. Option three, as Alderman Gist just described, is really looking at this much more comprehensively, perhaps sitting down with our local businesses, talking about needs, really hitting all of these criteria. And then option four, which we just discussed this afternoon, is perhaps to add another new section under the sign ordinance that would essentially allow developers to apply for a modification to their conditional use permit, which would allow them to create a master sign ordinance, or I'm sorry, a master sign plan, because it would be linked to a CUP. There would still be a public hearing requirement, but it would allow you all to kind of look at each application on a case-by-case basis and consider the special situations involved with those. And if you pursue certainly option three and to a lesser extent the other options, here are some things you might want to keep in mind. These are the types of things you typically consider when you're looking at signage and how to regulate them. One is, again, these individual tenant signs. I've shown you some samples. You can see kind of the projecting two-sided signs on Main Street there, as well as kind of the combined master sign over the for rent door. And then you can see another example of that master plan approach for Carmel Mall. This is a little excerpt that came from a planning advisory service book in the section that speaks to signage. And this talks about taking it a step further in your analysis to really talk about what is your viewshed? How do you see the sign? And this is looking at, well, what's the speed limit? Or is the sign going to be something that will be viewed as a pedestrian or in your car? How fast are you driving? How much time do you have to see the sign? Chapel Hill has something similar to this in their ordinance. And again, looking at Chapel Hill as another example, this is the Franklin. You're probably familiar with this. This is an example of a 4-to-5-story building where they have limited their sign to the 2-story or lower level. And their only sign really is this awning sign, and it seems to be adequate. Mm-hmm. Looking at them as another example on the lower left-hand corner, this is their sign to find parking, which is under the building. And their sign that's over the entrance, the actual entrance to the underground parking, is that same size. It's mm-hmm. about 1 foot tall and about 4 feet wide. That's just for comparison purposes. Your procedure tonight is to discuss as appropriate and to consider one of the now four options. Options one, two, and four, we staff believe that we could prepare in time for the June, the last public hearing before your summer recess. Option three, which would be the more comprehensive approach, would likely require more time and a subsequent future public hearing sometime after the break. Should you go with option three, that may be something where you'd want to get local businesses involved as well, as in addition to our regular advisory boards, just to get their input. And that's just something you may wish to consider.
I think we would also want downtown neighborhoods involved and not just little businesses. When I saw the sketch, I thought, if you go outside at 2 o'clock in the morning in Carborough and Hampton Inn gets what it is they're looking for, that's what you will see, is the Hampton Inn sign. And driving in from Wilson Park, that's what you will see. And our town's name is Carborough. Our town's name is not Hampton Inn. And I don't want that to be. So I feel that I would really like to go with option 3 and let's flesh this out once and for all. But please, I understand you need to talk to businesses. You also need to talk to the people who live in the town and who built the town.
Okay. let me recognize two people who are signed up just to address us real briefly. Laura Van Sant.
Mm-hmm.
And then Woody Farmer.
I'm Laura Van Sant with Main Street Properties, and I'm also here with Woody Farmer from the Tar Heel Lodging Group to briefly explain sort of why we're here now and why we felt the sign ordinance didn't really address the needs of either 300 East Main or any similar mixed-use projects that might come through. And let me first address the timing. We recognized this early on. We started talking to the town staff about this over a year ago. I really wish we were here at this point about 6 months ago and maybe could have had time to flesh out something more comprehensive. Unfortunately, we're here where we are now today, and as you all know, we're very excited that the hotel and the retail under it, the parking deck, are all under construction, and we need to figure out things like where to run wiring for signs and tell potential tenants what kind of signage they can have and whatnot. So there's some urgency for us, and I don't feel like we came here at the last minute requesting this. We've been trying to work on this for a while, and I do understand that why you might feel it's a little bit of a rush situation to try to come up with a comprehensive plan. Basically, to just explain why we're here, as Tina explained, the sign ordinance is sort of envisioned for street frontage, regular Main Street with some shops facing the street and whatnot. We have a bit of a different situation. As she said, here's Main Street here. We will have retail stores facing the street. We will also have retail bays facing this interior street, which is currently the location of Paget Lane. We don't get any extra signage for that because for that street frontage, only the public street counts. And in addition, we have a hotel and a parking deck that, unlike the Franklin, are not right up on Main Street. We intentionally designed this project to be very pedestrian-friendly, to have a similar feel at the street level to the shopping block you might have on the 100 block of Main Street, for example. But because of that, it's a little more difficult if you are trying to drive to get here to locate businesses. They're not all quite as visible. The Franklin Hotel, the front door of the hotel is right there on Franklin Street. The entrance to the parking deck is right there on Franklin Street. In our case, this will be what is there after this first phase is completed. You have two ways to get into this site if you're coming, say, from Chapel Hill. One will be where the new Boyd Street comes out by Domino's over that way. And the other one will be at the existing Lloyd Street light. There's a right in, right out here, but that's it. Once you're on the site, the parking deck entrance will be back here. The hotel lobby entrance will be here. It's just not obvious if you're driving down the street either how to get to the hotel or necessarily if we only have little tiny signs because we can't count all of our street frontage on both sides. It's just going to be really hard for people to locate either how to get to the hotel or to find the businesses. And what we are asking for, we don't think is unreasonable. What we would like is something in the neighborhood of about 24 square feet per sign for each retail business. And that is consistent with signs in Carborough. I just walked around today. On our site, we tell our tenants when they come in, we have a master sign plan somewhere. I actually don't know how much square footage we're allocated. If people ask me, I tell them, You have 24 square feet. I know you're safe with that. Some of them then do several signs and beyond that. But 24 square feet, the new Fleet Feet sign is 24 square feet, this cradle banner. Just eyeballing some of the signs around us, Milltown across the street, that just the round thing alone counts as 20 square feet because it gets counted double because of both sides. If you add in all their other signage, I don't know what the total would be. Acme is about 23 square feet for both of their signs. Southern Rail, One of many signs is this round one, which is would count as about 25 square feet. So that's not a we're not trying to have clutter up Carrboro with signs that aren't already there. We just want to give our retailers a chance to be seen, and then Woody is here and can address a little bit better the hotel needs. And one more thing before he comes up, though, is the point about this notion of Chapel Hill of no signs above the second story. This is the hotel. The front entrance is not at this front corner, which would be kind of a logical place maybe to stick a sign. But if you put a sign there, it's going to confuse people, I think, with the signage that might be for this retail space. They'll have people wandering in all day with their suitcases trying to check into a hotel, and it will really be a coffee shop or something. So the hotel, I think, has their own signage needs. They need people coming in from Chapel Hill, coming from out of town, to be able to find the building, and then they need to be able to be directed into the building. As far as the directional signs and whatnot, I think we can easily work something out that's mutually acceptable. We showed some signs above the parking with logos. They don't have to be there. We just need some signs that say hotel parking and public parking. I'll remind you, this is a public deck as well. The entrance to it is not on the street. It's not really easy to figure out how to get in there. I think it's in the interest of y'all's lease for that public parking to also make it simple for people to get in there. So I would request that you take a look at some things, and again, for our needs, on kind of the sooner the better. I'm sorry that we're in this position of sort of asking for a rush job. We did not come to you intending to do that. It's just the way the schedule's turned out. And Woody, I think you can talk about the hotel.
My name's Woody Farmer, and I'm here as a representative of Tarja Lodging, the hotel developer. I really want to start out by saying thanks to you and to all of you and your staff. Carrboro's been a good place to do business, and we're very appreciative of that, very supportive and very appreciative of that. And I don't develop a lot of hotels, but I hear stories from horror stories from other places, and that's not been the case here. So we very much appreciate the town's working with us. This is a big project, and we're asking for signage for really three main purposes. One is for safety, and we expect 30 to 40,000 cars arriving at this project per year just in our hotel park, not counting the other shops and businesses. If they just drive in one day and drive out the next, you're talking 60 to 80,000 additional vehicle trips within one small area of your town. These guests are not going to be local people. They are coming from, we believe, every state and many foreign countries. Hampton Inn is a nationally recognized chain, and so it will draw customer base from a variety of places. These people won't know their way around your town. We believe that the public safety requires that direction be given to the 80,000 cars that are coming and arriving if you want to help protect your citizens, pedestrians, and otherwise. This is not a negative. This is also very much a positive. You'll have a lot of new customers for your businesses downtown. So the first thing that we've asked for is directional signage. And that comes in two ways. One is where to turn to get into the parking deck and hotel. It doesn't have to have our name on it. It's more of just to direct people, here's public parking, and here's a hotel. And we have the example, I think, in here had two examples of that, none of which are set in stone. They were just ideas. The first was something like this at the two entrance locations, one on Boyd Street and one other on Lloyd Street, which are the two places you'll be able to make a left turn into these streets. Doesn't have to be a lamppost. It could be something very different. But this is a public parking deck. You want people to get in and out of it. The second type of signage along those lines that we have encouraged. And you have seen it with logo, but it does not have to have a logo on either side. But this is a parking sign to let people know this is where the parking facility is. And as Laura said, this is not real evident from this project because you've got to drive down Boy Street, you have to drive down Paget Lane, or you have to work your way through the project to find the parking deck. It's not like the Franklin right up on the main street. It requires a little navigation. We think people can do it, but they certainly want to know where they're going. So we want signs that help with that. The other two signs that we have, three signs that we've asked for, is one at the end of the Boyd Street exit, where we'd have a parking sign, the Boyd Street entrance. Also, we have a small hotel sign there with the Hampton Inn logo down at the street level so that you look at the deck and you see it. We had also requested an upper level sign facing Weaver Park. Talked to my partners, and we're not as wedded to that because we believe it'll eventually be blocked by the rest of the project as it's built up. And instead could just put a small sign down in the traffic circle right in front of our lobby entrance so people could know whichever way they turn, there's the hotel. The sign that seems to be generating a lot of controversy is the one Hampton Inn and Suites sign. And I want you to understand, now this is blocked lettering that's with lit behind it, and the lettering lights up, but nothing else. And we believe that due to the fact that this is very difficult to find your way here from Chapel Hill, we're not in the main commercial district of Chapel Hill, we're going to ask people to know where the hotel is and be able to take a left onto Boyd Street to go into the parking deck. That's about the first time they're going to know there's a hotel in this town. Now, we believe that's important. There's been some suggestion that, oh, Chapel Hill's got a great plan. Okay, so I went down and talked to Kay Pulstein. She said, we have a stinking plan. It's out of date. It's crummy, and I'd love to amend it. In fact, I'd love to work with Carver and rewrite all of our plans and have a joint plan. She said, it'll take a while. She said, ours is antiquated. The fact that we don't have high signage on the higher buildings is leading to all kinds of problems identifying how to get to them. She gave me an example, just one. This is her volunteeriness.
Excuse me. I missed who you're referring
this
to.
This is the sign administrator for the town of Chapel Hill, Kay Pearlstein.
Okay.
And so she says their sign ordinance that she's administered for 20 years is terrible, so don't be adopting it. Particularly, she pointed out two things with high-rise signs. They've kept their signs a two-story limit. For example, the Marriott on Highway 54, there's a three-story tree barrier in front of it. Nobody can find the hotel.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Could you focus on Carrboro, please?
My point is this. I've heard cited right in this material, Chapel Hill ordinance, and the Chapel Hill administrator says it stinks. Okay? So just understand that. That's where I was coming from. She said that concept of not having signage at an appropriate level for important buildings was antiquated. Okay. And your sign ordinance doesn't prohibit it right now.
Your comment that we'll be getting 80,000 new cars a year, that really wouldn't have been a selling point when you were going after the permit. We've been very, very accommodating to this project. I don't know where you're from, but Carrboro is a unique small town that values its small town flavor. So this is a huge new project for us and a lot to adapt to. And I understand the hotel's need to have a sign high up that people can come from all over, but we have other needs to consider other than the hotel's needs. We have the needs of the rest of the community. So I think the board really needs to take a very long look at this. And I would encourage us to go with option three with understanding that we have been very accommodating to the hotel.
I am from a small town. If I remember one of the first hearings I came to, you made the same comment. Okay, at that time, your ordinance had no height limitation. We have been told assuredly that. Okay. The people would work with us. We've already started a hotel. Yes, we'll build it and they'll come if they can find it. Okay.
All right. I think we've
but here, I'm in favor of any good option that you want. We're here to work with you, but we need an understanding that we're a national franchise hotel. They have requirements. We're trying to accommodate them as well. Okay.
Could you, just one, I'm curious, you mentioned public safety. What was the public safety connection?
Adequate directional signage so people know how to get in and out of the streets.
And stuff like that.
For example, if they don't turn in the Boyd Street entrance and they try to turn to Paget Lane, it's a no left turn.
All right.
So you've got cars roaming all around the place trying to figure out how to get into the project.
Got it.
Okay. Thanks, Wood.
Thank
you. All right. You had a question for staff.
Yeah. It probably was in here, but how long would it take to research option three? I was just wondering about that. Because it sounds like at the end of June, option one and two and four could be explored. But how long are we talking for option three, which we're probably most interested in?
It would probably take a couple of months.
So by the end of the summer?
Perhaps.
Fall, let's say.
I think so.
Okay. I mean, I wasn't asking with
an expectation. So planning staff is happier about fall than summer.
Okay. People could go with the ordinance that we now have, and if it changes, they can change.
Dan, yes, I apologize.
Yes, that's okay. So given that any option that we send to public hearing is going to require the staff effort to prepare the draft ordinance for the public hearing, and given that there are four options on the table, it seems we might want to talk a little bit about winnowing them down. And with that in mind, the fact of the matter is that this is a unique situation for us, and it's a circumstance that we don't know when or if it will arise again. So I'm not sure that I see the necessity for any broadly written ordinance or ordinance change. Mm-hmm. And I happen to like the idea that lets an applicant have a CUP modification for a specific project where they come in and address their signage needs, which is pretty much what he was just attempting to do here. Obviously, it would be more formal. And that way, the change we need to make to land use ordinance is much simpler, and then the task we would take in terms of this hotel would be very focused, and you know, perhaps it would be a minimal amount of work that would not need to be repeated again for at least for some years, since we know no hotels coming anytime soon.
But you would include going before advisory boards and having a public hearing so the public could have their input.
Absolutely.
On this and not just
businesses.
Well,
it's set up in the presentation that it would require a public hearing.
An advisory board.
Yeah. So that would be my suggestion, that we actually have the public hearing on option four. And
okay, so that's a motion for option four. Give direction to staff for option four. Wait, well, okay, nobody's even seconded it yet. Don't worry, we're not going to move. Is that. all right. all those in favor. Mindy?
I just had a question, which really doesn't have so much to do with this project, but. You know, one of the things that keeps coming back to us from local business folks are the cyber businesses that do not have any appreciable storefront. And so even though, you know, if we're looking at these options, one of the concerns that folks in business currently have, the startups and the cyber businesses, is being able to have some space to advertise because presently they don't. So I'm just wondering,
In other words, because
option four wouldn't cover that.
In other words, because the ordinance doesn't allow you to advertise off-site
exactly.
at all now.
So the reason I'm raising this now is because if we're going to be discussing signage at some other point, I would like that to be included. These are folks who've been here for several years, and they've been waiting for this to come around. Mm-hmm. And so just not that it – I mean, if this is option four, that's fine with me, but at some – point
Randy,
as we're
could you encourage them to come in and talk to us about their issues? Then they
well, they did and they have, and
there's somebody working
here
on that. There's an intern working
Chris.
On that.
Addressing this board or
yeah, or? Oh, yeah. They came and they spoke to the when they met with the Economic Sustainability Commission. They brought it up.
Oh, but
and
I'm
Brian,
saying petition. He's talking about petitioning
oh,
this board.
No,
I think.
I don't think
yeah.
you. Don't
yeah,
think
so we can as a body understand what
the
issues
kind of
are,
refer that
and then give the staff direction okay. on follow up.
I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
All right, Lydia, and then.
Yeah, my question with option four was, what would be our time frame if we went with option four?
I think they're saying they're going to come back to us in June. Is that right?
That was my understanding. As Dan indicated, it's not terribly complicated. The essence of it is you present a plan, you like it or you don't like it. I mean, it's going to be it'll be a little more complicated. There'll be some standards and something like that. But, I mean, it's sort of akin to what you've done with some other provisions where there's some architectural standards, but they can present an alternative, and that's basically what you'd be talking about doing. And in terms of the time frame for it, the ordinance could be done that by the 26th, is that right?
26th.
By the 26th, it's also possible, for one to entertain it, that they could apply, present their sign plan. If the board adopted the ordinance, they could also present the sign plan that same evening if they wanted to, if you wanted to accelerate that consideration.
But that doesn't really seem workable because the issues Jackie raised about advisory board review and citizen notice. That we wouldn't want to do once, you know, if it's uncertain that we're going to adopt the ordinance, then, you know.
That's fine. I mean,
yeah, so that would probably be in.
This is something
I think we'll be looking at September.
Okay. All right. Very good. So it's been moved and seconded that we request the staff to pursue option four and come back to this on June 20th, whatever, 6th. Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, not passed unanimously. Are there any other matters from the town staff?
Tina, thanks for your work on that.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Manager, anything else from the staff?
Thank you.
Anything else from board members? Okay. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Second.
The moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All right, opposed. Matter passed unanimously.